Okay, morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Lamed Zayin. We are in Lamed Vav Amud Beis. We are in the middle of the Amud and a discussion about Hechsher. We know for a food to become tummy, so first it needs to become Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumah. It needs to first be prepared to become tummy, susceptible to Tumah. Susceptibility to Tumah generally, traditionally comes through contact with a liquid, not just any liquid, but one of the seven liquids. The seven liquids of the Torah, I'm not going to go through them right now. Yesterday I gave a little bit of a brain teaser in terms of assigning each one of the liquids to one of the Yamim Tovim, including the two Derabbanans. Anyway, right before Shir, we just went through them. But anyway, in the meantime, however, so we know that traditional Hechsher comes through the contact with the liquids, and so therefore when any of these foods come into contact with any of the seven liquids, and it has to be Beratzon, and it has to be that you want it to come into contact with these liquids, so then it is now Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumah. There are also more atypical ways to become Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumah. One is Chibas HaKodesh. Chibas HaKodesh is this idea that when something is assigned to be used for a karban, so even without Mayim or any of the Mashkim, it's going to become Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumah just by virtue of the fact that it is associated with the Beis HaMikdash and it's Kodesh. And it could even be, as we saw very quickly yesterday, it doesn't even have to be a food. It can even be something like a block of wood that's going to go on the top of the Mizbeach. That also is Mukhshir L'Kabel Tumah. Pshute Kliyetz. So again, Chibas HaKodesh is a very strong, powerful idea that because something is associated with Kodesh, so therefore it's going to be susceptible to Tumah. And furthermore, also Shechita according to Rabbi Shimon. The act of Shechita according to Rabbi Shimon also serves as a Machshir. And so that also is a more atypical way in order to make something susceptible to Tumah. And that is the act of Shechita. Why should Shechita be a Machshir? So I showed you yesterday Rashi and Tosfos both on Lamed Hay, where on Lamed Hay and Beis. So Rashi and Tosfos both say it has to do with the fact that you're Mashve Laochel. In other words, by the act of Shechita, making something inedible and turning it into a product which is edible, so therefore it's just like Hechsher. Hechsher, susceptibility to Tumah, when I wash the food, making it from inedible to edible. So too, when the act of Shechita, it's the same thing. It's Mashva LaOchel. It converts it from being inedible to edible. That's the Rashi and Tosfos in understanding of Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara then, yesterday, after going over all this, everything we just went over, the Gemara wants to know, when we're using the unconventional Hechsher of Chibas HaKodesh, and Shechita according to Rabbi Shimon, is it going to behave in the regular rules of Tumah Tahara, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, or is it just simply going to be make it susceptible enough where it's going to become Tameh, but it's not going to behave in the regular rules of Tumah Tahara? The way the Gemara coins it is it going to go through Rishon and Sheni, or is it not going to go through Rishon and Sheni? And so this was a discussion and a dialogue that took place in the course of yesterday's daf. Quite frankly, we're in the middle of the discussion, Tashma. We left off yesterday about a third of the way down on the daf. The Amar Le Abaye Asoke Hechsher Mayim Midrabanan Amar Rabbi Zera Tashma. Sorry, it's the last word in the line is Amar. First word in the line is Abaye, and we'll start with the words Amar Rabbi Zera Tashma. So the Gemara now is going to try to seek clarity on this issue from the following Habotzel Agas. Let's say now we are harvesting, okay, and we're harvesting grapes over here. Rashi describes this Bitsira. The Bitsira, the harvesting that we're doing now, is into a basket, and the basket is perforated. Sorry. And Shammai Omer Hechsher, Hillel Omer Lahuchsher, Vishasik Le Hillel Shammai. So a machlok is between Shammai and Hillel. Now that's unusual because the machloksim are generally between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. There are only a handful of machloksim that occur between Shammai and Hillel themselves. But here's one of them, and that is that now there is some liquid being expressed from the grapes as they are now put together in one basket. In other words, a lot of grapes in one basket, pressure, and some discharge of liquid. But the truth of the matter is that you don't really want this liquid because it's put into a perforated basket, which means that the liquid is holech li'ibud. So that means to say that this liquid is not going to be a machshir. Because for Hechsher, it's like rule number one is that it has to be beratzon. And you don't really want this liquid. So Shammai and Hillel are arguing whether or not this liquid that is coming into contact with the grapes, which by the way is the discharge of the grapes, it's grape juice, right? We'll put it under the category of yayin. So is it going to be a machshir, yes or no? So machlokis. So now, as Rashi points out over here, Shammai Amar Hochshar, Afagav de lo nichle b'mashka ha'yotzmehem da'ali yibrazle, gazrina la b'yitziya Shabbos, shema yivatzrena b'kupos mezufafos. So what is behind the sheet of Shammai? Meaning he agrees to the basic principle of Ratzon. That's true. But over here, Shammai feels that there should be a gzera derabanan, and that we should make a tumah derabanan. Why? Because even though now currently it's in a perforated basket, but the next time I'm going to be harvesting, I'll harvest it in a non-perforated basket, a sealed basket. That means that all the juice is going to get collected. It's not holech li'ibud, and that would be l'ratzon. And so therefore, we're going to make a gzera one out to the other. So the Gemara says, Amaiha v'halav ochel haba b'mayim hu. Now the Gemara says, that now this is not considered your typical hechsher because it is not mashke b'ratzon. So Amalei Abai asuke hechsher mayim d'rabanan. So again, Abai's response is, okay, you're right, but this is a din d'rabanan. Meaning, what I'm asking over here is whether or not Rishon and Sheni operate on a d'oraisa level. Okay, so on a d'rabanan level, you want to tell me that it operates on a d'rabanan level, that's fine. Amalei Rav Yosef Amin Alcha Ana Uchshu B'Shchita V'at Amart Li Asu Ke'ech Shamayim V'Amalei Lecha Rebbe Zer V'Amart Li Asu Ke'ech Shamayim So L'Resh Lakish Nami Asu Ke'ech Shamayim. So Rav Yosef says, look, I really don't understand this exchange that we're having back and forth. Meaning, I'm asking you about Hechsher B'Shchita, and you come back at me with well, it operates on a Durabana level. And then I ask you about Hechsher B'Mayim, and you say, well, it operates on a Durabana level. And every single time, you keep answering me that it operates on a Durabana level. So Amar Lei, Atzer Rabbi Shimon Lekesh, Litlos Kami Ba'ilei, Ki Kami Ba'ilei, Lisrof. So I'm not asking you whether or not we should be somewhere in the middle, meaning operating on some sort of Durabana level. What I'm asking you is Sreifa, meaning if this was Truma, and it undergone these unconventional hechshers, I'm asking you, should we burn the Truma? Meaning you keep coming back at me with, well, Durabanan, Durabanan. On any Truma Durabanan, what are we going to do with the Truma? Nothing. Meaning we're not going to eat it, we're not going to burn it, we're not going to eat it because it's Tami Durabanan, we're not going to burn it, because the Truma is not a Truma D'Araisa, so it's going to be in this suspended state. I'm not asking you about suspension. I'm asking you about a Din D'Araisa. Meaning, in the event that it receives an unconventional hechsher, is it going to be mukshir l'kabel tumah on a d'oraisa level? Now, the Gemara says, now wait one second, mechlal d'chibas akodesh d'oraisa. Now, so in other words, basically, don't give me habotzo lagas because that's a din d'rabanan. Don't give me shchita according to Rabbi Shimon because that too is also mid d'rabanan. What I want to know is something which is d'oraisa like chibas akodesh. And to which the Gemara's counter response is, wait a second, chibas akodesh is a din d'oraisa? And now the Gemara is going to try to argue that the whole concept of Chibas HaKodesh is a Din D'Oraisa. And now the question is it going to make it a Rishon and Sheni? Meaning, once we establish that the Chibas HaKodesh is a D'Oraisa, so then is it going to behave in the way that a Mashke would behave? So, perhaps it comes from the following, the Basa that comes into contact with anything which is Tameh. Hai Basa Dis Kasha B'Mai. Now, how did this meat become mukhshar? How did it become susceptible? Elam diz kasha b'dam. So the Gemara now, mind you, by the way, we're talking about karbanos. So are we now suggesting that it's the blood of the animal that created the hechsher? We know that's not true. The Hamar Rabbi Chiyabar Abba Amar Rav Yochem Minayin L'dam Kachim Sheino Machshir Shenem Lo Sochlenu Ala Aretz Nishpachenu Kamayim Dam HaNishpach Kamayim Machshir Sheino Nishpach Kamayim Eino Machshir. We saw this but just a couple of days ago. We know that dam of a carbon is simply not a machshir. Only blood that is spilled on the ground like water, only that kind of blood is a machshir. Dam kachim, because there is not only does it not go on the ground, it's not allowed to go on the ground. The whole purpose of a carbon is to capture the blood in a bowl to sprinkle it on the mizbeach. So we know that a dam of a carbon is not a machshir. So how did the carbon itself become mukhshir l'kabel tumah? Maybe because of all the liquids that are in the Beis HaMikdash. Meanwhile, we learn back in Pesachim that all the mashkim of the Beis HaMikdash in the Azara are tower. Not only are they tower, they don't even serve as hechsher. And maybe that's going only on the blood, but not on any of the other mashkin. Yeah, but that's not the memra. The memra was going on all liquids in the Azara. So therefore, the only way that the carbon received its hechsher is only through the principle of Chibas HaKodesh. Now remember, we're teaching a pasuk. We're explaining a pasuk right now. So if the pasuk now is telling us that the animal is susceptible to tuma, and we ruled out the blood because the blood of a carbon is not a machshir, and we ruled out the mashkim of the azara because they're also not going to be a machshir. So the only thing left is the concept of Chibas HaKodesh, and we're using that to explain a pasuk in the Torah. Hence, it's a din d'oraisa. V'dilma k'd Rav Yehuda Mashmul, d'am Rav Yehuda Mashmul k'gon, sh'ayisa lo parashol zivchei shlamin v'havir b'nachal, shachta v'adayim ashketo fe'achalaha. So the Gemara says, okay, but if I had an option, we could have interpreted it as follows. Maybe the part of the cow was of a shlamin, and while walking it to the Beis HaMikdash, so we had to go through a river, and while going through the river, so the animal got wet, and by the time we got to the Azara, the animal did not fully dry, so there's still moisture from the passage of the river, and maybe that's how the animal became Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah. Meaning, so I could construct a scenario, albeit it's unlikely, but at least we could construct a scenario in which the animal is receiving Hechsher through some other means, other than using the principle of Chibas HaKodesh. Elam Yisefa. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'm still going to contend that Chibas HaKodesh is a din d'oraisa. How do I know that? The Pasuk says, V'abasar l'rabos eitzim ulevono. Now, the Habasar is coming to teach me that not only is the meat going to be Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah, but so is the wood, and so is the frankincense. These are inedible materials. Eitzim ulevono b'nei achila nenu, ela Chibas HaKodesh machshara luhu, mishavi luhu ochel. So the Chibas HaKodesh concept is able to take them and turn them into food. Which, mind you, by the way, really in terms of Hechsher, it's even one step greater. Meaning, Hechsher takes something which is edible, but makes it even more edible. Meaning, the washing of a food makes it more edible. Here, it's actually taking a non-edible substance and giving it the status of making it edible. Obviously, it does not make it edible, physically edible. The wood now, we can't take a bite out of it. But still, the idea of Chibas HaKodesh is that it transitions it, it gives it a status of ochel. So so now we've established that Chibas HaKodesh is in fact a din d'oraisa. Good. And now with all that stated, so with one word, the Gemara now resets the question. My. So now, on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, so now that we've reset established a Chibas HaKodesh is d'oraisa, so Shechita according to Rabbi Shimon may not be a din d'oraisa, and the Gzeira d'Rabbanan of Habos Lagas may not be a din d'oraisa, but over here Chibas HaKodesh is a din d'oraisa of an unconventional hechsher, and I just mean that by unconventional. It's not mashke, it's not using one of the seven liquids, but rather it's going through the process of Chibas HaKodesh. So now that it operates on a din d'oraisa, so the follow-up question is going to be, how does it operate? Ki mehan yechibas HaKodesh lepsula degufe, aval lemim nebe rishon v'shino lo, odim aloshna. So now that it operates on a d'oraisa level, so how does it operate? Using the regular conventional rules of Tuma Tahara, Rishon, Sheni. So now the food becomes Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah through Chibas HaKodesh. The buster of the carbon becomes Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah through Chibas HaKodesh. So now, the meat now coming into contact with Tumah, is that a Rishon? When it touches another piece of meat, does that become a Sheni? Etc., etc. Or perhaps, no. In other words, just enough Hechsher so that it's going to become Tameh, but that's it. It's not going to then transmit the Tumah to another item. Teiku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. We are on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We are at the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud. And the rest of today, we're talking now about a Mesukenes. Okay, let's get definitions very clear over here in the beginning of the Sugya. There are three terms which are not interchangeable, although the Gemara is going to try to make them interchangeable over the course of the next Sugya, and that is Nevela, Trefa, and Mesukenes. Okay, let's try to be as clear as possible. A Nevela. Animal is dead, and the animal did not receive a proper Shechita. That animal is a Nevela. Doesn't matter if the animal died on its own, then it doesn't matter if it died with human intervention, doesn't matter if it was attacked by another animal. The animal, if it died without a proper shechita, is a nevela. Trefa. Trefa is an animal that is symptomatic. It has one of its organs punctured. In just a short amount of time, we're going to be starting the third parak of the Masechta, and we're going to go through all the simanei trefa. What exactly are the organs? How exactly are they going to be perforated, severed? We're going to go through all the anatomy starting a couple days from now. If that animal is now symptomatic, even while it's alive, it's a trefa. Now, if it dies subsequently, okay, so then it's also going to become a nevela. But while it's alive and it's symptomatic, it's going to be a trefa. Now, there is a discussion, a debate that we're going to be seeing over the course of the third parak. It is one of the more fundamental debates that take place, whether a trefa is chaya or a trefa is eno chaya. And by the way, there's also another machlokus tucked away also in the third parak of whether or not it can procreate or not procreate. But in the meantime, however, one of the most basic machloksim is it how terminal is it? Meaning it's certainly terminal, but to the point where we don't expect it to make it in the next 12 months, or it could make it a little bit longer. That is a machlokus coming up in the third parak regarding a trefa. But a definition of trefa is even while the animal is alive, as long as it's symptomatic, it is a trefa. And then a mesukenis. A mesukenis is just close to expiration. No symptoms. It's asymptomatic. In other words, it's just simply like all biological things, it comes to a point where it hit its term. And so immediately before that, now I say immediately, right? It's hard. It's going to be very difficult to wrap our heads around exactly when this period of mesukenis begins. But when it's clearly now holech lamos, when it is now hitting its expiration, so at that point in time, the animal's mesukenis. It's not an avail, it's not dead yet. It's not a trefa because there's nothing symptomatic about the animal. It's just, that's it. And now, old age. And so under the circumstances where the animal is a mesukenis, so is the animal, such an animal, mutter? Well, obviously, an ishrita. Good. So we shech the animal. Okay, now is it mutter? So on one hand, you can make the argument, well, why not?
I don't know why he died.
Ah. But on the other hand, however, in other words, maybe the animal that we can eat only had to have full chiyus. It had to have full life force. This animal that did not have full life force, maybe it's too close to becoming a nevela, where really we either can't eat it, or maybe we shouldn't eat it. And what we're going to learn together in the Mishnah is no such thing. When the animal is a mesukenis and we shecht it before it died, so it is good. Now, a couple of things. First of all, there's a Tosfos in the beginning. I know we haven't read a word of the Mishnah yet. There's a Tosfos in the beginning that says that even though the Mishnah sounds like it's bidyeved, it's not. This is a din lechatchila, right? Afil lechatchila says Tosfos. Now, there's only one proviso, and that is that we have to know that what killed it. We have to know that the shechita killed it. Meaning because it's a mesukenis and because right now it's an inevitable and imminent death that's coming, we just have to know that the shechita is the cause of death and not the animal's own lack of life force. So all we need is a siman to know that it was alive up to and through shechita. That's all we need. But once we know that, we're good to go. Okay. And so what we're going to be learning now in the Mishnah is the various simanim that we need to see at the time of shechita to know that there was life force up to and through the shechita. Okay? And that's it. And that's the Mishnah.
Can I show you?
Yes.
So if you can't shecht an animal that's going to die within 12 months, right? How could you shecht an animal that you know is going to die imminently?
Right. But it's a wonderful question. And the answer is that a trefa is an actual status. Meaning, just because the animal's holech lamos, okay, but the animal's alive. Trefa is a status that's given by the Torah to this animal, whereby the Torah says to us that we can't eat it. The Gemara is going to ask a question similar to the one you just asked a little bit later on, but the answer is, in this case, the Torah says it's okay, and in this case, the Torah says it's not okay. Meaning, once it is symptomatic of one of the simani trefa we're going to be learning in the course of the third parak, so now it has the status of being a trefa. Okay? The Mishnah starts off, Ashokhe, Mesukenes, Roshim, Gamliel, Omer, Achit, Tiparches, Biyad, Virago. So, various opinions in the Mishnah, we are now looking for a sign that the animal was alive during Shechita. Because as I explained in the intro, we just have to know that the shechita is what killed the animal, and not the animal's own lack of life. So, what according to Rishon Gamliel, what you need is a convulsion. The front leg, the back leg, it doesn't matter, I need a convulsion. Rebbe Lazar Omer Daya Im Zinka. Rebbe Lazar says, no, I don't even need a convulsion. It would be enough if we just see a strong spurt of blood coming out of the neck of the animal. That's all we need. Now, by the way, contrast that to the previous mission that we learned. In the previous mission, we talked about a bloodless shechita, where you shechted the animal and no blood came out. But mind you, the previous mishnah, it was not a mesukenis. Over here, the animal is a mesukenis. So I need a blood spurt, it says Rabbi Lazar, but that's all I need. Meaning I don't need any kind of convulsion. I'm Rabbi Shimon Ashoche Belayla Lamacha Ishka Mamatza Katalim Malayim Dam Kshera Shezinka Ukemidas Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Shimon says, let's say as follows. More forensics. Right? We're doing a lot of forensics over here in this parak, and we're going to be doing even more in the next parak. More forensics. So what happens is you shechted the animal at night. You really didn't see what was going on. Right? We talked earlier in the Masechta about shechting at night. It's not the best scenario to be shechting at night. If you can produce a little bit of fire at night, so then we learned earlier in the Masechta, so then go for it. But really, in the absence of light, you really shouldn't shecht. But bid the evidence, fine. So let's say you shechted at night, and the animal was a mesukenis, and now you didn't see convulsion because you just simply couldn't see. And so in the next morning, if you wake up and you see blood was splattered all over the wall, so that's great. Because now you know there was a splattering of the blood. As long as we assume that we follow the shita of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon says we're fine. Uchemidas Rabbi Elazar. V'chachamim omrim ashe tiparches obi arabi regal ashe tichash kesh biznava. Echa behem adaka v'echa behem agasa. So, the chachamim simply reject the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, and of course who he follows, which is Rabbi Eliezer. And according to the chachamim, you need pirchos, you need convulsion. Either the front leg or the back leg, or convulsion could also include the wagging of the tail. And it doesn't matter whether the animal is large or if it is small, right? Or in proper order of the Mishnah, small or large. Now, when it comes to a small animal, if all you have is a convulsion of the leg, but only just one direction, where basically it's post-shaped. It was in a bent position, and then when you shechted it, it strained out. That's not enough of a siman to know that the animal was certainly alive during shechita. Now, all this, everything we just learned in this Mishnah, is only when the animal was in a state of mesukenes. If the animal was a healthy animal, we don't need to look for simanim, meaning we know that the shechita is what killed it. And we don't have to concern ourselves with, well, maybe it died before Shechita. All this we just learned is only when the animal is starting off in a state of misukenis. Okay. Misukenis mimai desharye, umimai tesek adaitan daasire. And so now the Gemara just ping-pongs back and forth between the two extremes. Meaning the animal is a misukenis. How do I know it's permitted? The Gemara says, okay, and how and why would I have thought that it was usur? And the Gemara just now back and forth in that one line of Gemara of, well, where's the starting point? What is the starting assumption regarding an animal that's a mesukenis? Do we start with the assumption that it's totally mutter, like a regular animal? Or is our starting point is that it's usher? Now, we all know what the conclusion is. Meaning, the Mishnah taught us what the conclusion is. It's good. As long as you shecht it, as long as there's a siman that it was alive up to and through the shechita, so you're good to go. Then we know for sure. We know the conclusion. But the Gemara says, where's the starting point in terms of, is it mutter or is it aser? So that's the Gemara's back and forth. Misukenis mimai desharye. How do I know it's permitted? And the Gemara's follow-up immediately is, umimai tesek adaitan daasire. Why would you have thought that it's aser? Dichsiv zos achaya asher tochlo. Chaya echol v'sheinu chaya lo sochal. So the Gemara says here's the starting point. We're in Parsha Shmini and the Torah is introducing us to the kosher animals. And the Torah says, zos achaya asher tochlo. Now, the simple pshat of the Torah is, these are the animals in which you're allowed to eat. As the Torah is now about to list and identify various animals that are mutter. But what the Gemara now is darshaning is that we're not only saying that these are the animals, but chaya from the word chiyus. In order for us to be able to eat an animal, it has to have life force. Meaning it had to have been alive and well. Obviously, we're not eating the animal while alive, obviously. But what it means is that in order for it to be a kosher animal, it had to have had life force, and it was, and only was the shechita that caused its death. So zos achaya shetochlu chaya chov v'sheinu chaya lo sochal. V'ha misukenis eino chaya. Now, this Mesukenis is not qualified as Chaya because it's a Mesukenis. It's Holech Lamus. And so, therefore, it is absent of the status of being a Chaya because it's a Mesukenis. So, that's the Havamina. That's why I would have thought that if an animal is a Mesukenis, so even though we shat it, we're not allowed to eat it. And even if we know the Shechita is what killed it, we're still not allowed to eat it. Again, this is all under Havamina, because the Torah says we're only allowed to eat Chaya, and this immediately before Shechita wasn't a Chaya. Its life force was going out, therefore it's not a Chaya, and therefore it is usher for us to eat. Now, in terms of Isurim, what Isur do you want to call that? So, the answer is it's not a lav.
Right.
Because the Torah is saying, Zos hachaya asher tochlu. This is the chaya which you're going to eat. So this is what's called an halacha, a lav haba michlal aseh. Meaning the Torah is telling us positively what we are supposed to do, inferred from that, or implied from that, right? People infer. So implied from that is that, implicit in that, is that if the animal is not a chai, we're not allowed to eat it. This is what's called an halacha, a lav haba michlal aseh. What category does that go under? Is that a lav or is that an aseh? The answer is very clear. The Gemara says it all the time. Lav haba michlal aseh. It falls under the category of an aseh. So that is all under the havamina. The Gemara says, and now what's the maskana? Mida merchman neve lo sochal michlal de mesukenisharye. The Gemara says, yeah, but I know, on the other hand, what does the Torah tell us not to eat? A nevela. What's the nevela? So go back to what I said in the intro. In other words, a nevela is post-mortem. Only if the animal died sans shchita, so then and only then is the animal usher. Anything prior to that, and the animal would be mutter. Nevela socha mechal de mesukenisharye. The Yisak adach mesukenis asira. Because imagine for just a moment. Let's say mesukenis was in fact usher. So now, if the Mesukenis now is in fact Aser, so then what is the Torah introducing us with Nevela? I don't get it. Nevela doesn't add anything. Mesukenis already is Aser, so for sure Nevela is going to be Aser. If the Torah is giving us the limits of when something first becomes Aser, and the Torah says Nevela, that by definition must mean anything prior to that must be Mutter. That is now the argument of the Gemara that we know Mesukenis is mutter. The Gemara says, if that's your argument, it's not compelling. Vidilma, hainu nevela, hainu Mesukenis. Maybe we could argue the following. Mesukenis and nevela are really interchangeable terms. Now, I don't really mean literally interchangeable, but basically they're categorically the same. When the animal is holech lamos, as it is now approaching death, so we could really say, you know what that is? It's a nevela. Meaning, okay, in other words, we don't have to call nevela, we could call Mesukenis, but categorically it's all one and the same thing. Because what is a nevela? A nevela is an animal that expired. What is a Mesukenis? Trending towards expiration. And so therefore it's one and the same thing. And as far as what the Torah is doing in terms of repeating itself, well, as Rashi explains over here, it's very simple. Meaning, before actual death, it's just an Isser Aseh, like I explained a moment earlier. And after death, we're going to add a lav on top of that. But categorically, it's really all the same. So the Gemara says, Lo Sakadach. The Gemara says, no, I'm not ready to entertain that. Yechtiv Chiyamos Min HaBehema, Asher Haya Lachem La'achla HaNogeh B'Nivlasa. Because now, as we also turn to other Psukim and Parsha Shmini, the Torah says that if an animal were to die, that was edible. So hanogea binivlasa. So if you come into contact with the carcass of the animal, so as we read the pasuk carefully, when does the animal start getting the status of nevela? That's only after it died. But before it died, it's not a nevela. So the Gemara continues to counter argue. So no, the Gemara says no. I could still maintain. Then nevela mesukenis are all still the same category. A mechayim ba'aseh. La'achamisa belav. And as we just explained just a moment earlier, but here the Gemara spells it out, that what the Torah is doing is as follows. There's nothing changing in terms of its status. As it's trending towards expiration, as it's trending towards death, it's a mesukenis. Categorically the same thing as nevela. The only difference is the level of iser. as a misukenis, it's an iser aseh. When it dies, it's a lav. So elamadam rechmana, so the Gemara now continues to try to now argue. And this is basically all we're doing for the rest of today's daf. Meaning our purpose, our goal for the rest of today's daf is to find the source in the Torah that clearly indicates that a misukenis is mutar. We, in other words, again, we know the conclusion. And misukenis is mutar, and the way Tosfos points it out, mutar afil lechatchila. You could shech the misukenis and eat it, and not without any hesitation whatsoever. Again, what we need to see, as we learned back in the Mishnah, is you need to see simanim, that the animal died as a result of shechita, not because of its trending towards expiration, but after that, it's totally fine. And now, all we're doing for the rest of today's daf is, we're going to try to find that in the Torah. Where is the clearest indication in the Torah that a misukenis is in fact mutter? So the Gemara now attempts from the following. So the Gemara says, well, the Torah says that a trefa you're not allowed to eat. So it sounds like a misukenis would be permissible. The Gemara says, look, let's think this through. If a misukenis was in fact prohibited, what is a misukenis? So like I explained in the beginning of the Mishnah, a misukenis is basically an animal that's holech lamos, which is asymptomatic. There is nothing physically off on the animal. There's no puncture, there's no perforation, there's no severing of any internal organ. Everything is intact. It's just simply biology. It's just that everything biological is going to die in this animal is right now trending in that direction. If that were usur, then obviously a trefa would be usur. Because a trefa is basically the same thing, but even worse. Because a trefa actually has a chisaron. There is actually physically something wrong, a defected in the animal. So if a misukenis is usur, for sure a trefa should be usur. So if the Torah were interested in giving us the limits of isur, so the Torah should move the bar over from trefa and move it over to misukenis. By virtue of the fact that the Torah puts it at trefa, it means misukenis must be okay. That's the argument. The Gemara says, V'doma hainu trefa, hainu misukenis. And the Gemara says, again, like we said earlier, maybe, categorically, they're really one and the same. V'doma hainu trefa, hainu misukenis, v'lavar la ba'aseh v'losaseh. And over here, what we could say is as follows. If the animal is only a misukenis, so categorically it's a trefa. It's not technically a trefa. Categorically it is, and it's a violation of an aseh. And then, when you go, and then if it actually has a defect, a physical defect, any one of the simani trefa we're going to be learning in the next parak, so not only is it an aseh, it's also a lav as well. But categorically, it's all the same. So again, if this is my only argument, it's not a strong enough argument. So the Gemara says, now, if you're right about everything we just said, that a misukenis is aser through a nisar aseh, and a trefa is aser through a lav, so let me ask you now another question. What did Nevela add to the entire discussion? So, and the Gemara goes on to argue. Look, if the animal's alive and it's holech lamos, and if it's asymptomatic, it's an aseh. If it's symptomatic, it's a lav and an aseh. And now the animal actually dies. The Gemara says, and so what? We are already bound by an aseh and a los aseh that we're not allowed to eat it. So what does Nevela add to the whole discussion? Vidilma, hainu Nevela, hainu Trefa, hainu Misukenis. And the Gemara says, okay, maybe we can just simply say that categorically, all three of these things are all categorically the same. What is a Nevela? A Misukenis. What is a Misukenis? It's a Trefa. And the circle now is complete. And what the Gemara now is arguing, again, these are just arguments of the Gemara. These are not the conclusions. But in the argument now of the Gemara, so what we could say is that they're all the same. It's all the same. And then why is the Torah giving us them as different terms? Just in terms of onus, just in terms of punishment. V'lav or alav, v'shnei lav and v'aseh. So in other words, if the animal, I'm going to go step by step. If the animal is asymptomatic but it's dying, that's a misukenis. That's an iser aseh. And then if the animal gets an actual defect, that's a trefa. That's now a lav. So now the animal is dying and it has a physical defect. So that's now an aseh and a lav. And then the animal actually dies, that's a nevela. So that's now an aseh plus a lav plus a second lav as well. But it's all the same category. So we don't have right now any concrete, clear raya of the Gemara that misukenis is mutter.
As we said, the Rashi seems to be saying that if we just had trade patterns, we wouldn't need a bela. In what sense? The bela is a perfectly healthy animal.
Right. If the Torah would have just introduced us to the concepts of treifa and mesukenes, we would know already that a nevela is usser. If the animal is already usser as it's trending towards death, then for sure it's going to be usser when it actually dies. That's the argument of the Gemara. And what the counter argument of the Gemara is, yeah, but you know what? It could be that they're all the same category, and it's just a question of tacking on another lav, start with an essay, add another lav, add a second lav.
But
it's all the same category.
No,
these are all psukim. There's not kav v'chomer. These are psukim. Okay? Elam e'acha. So here we go now with another try. And I told you, it's the entirety of today's daf. An attempt to show with clarity that a mesukenes is in fact mutter. The Torah says, v'chelev nevela v'chelev trefa l'chom alach, I'm sorry, chelev nevela v'chelev trefa ye aseh l'chom alachah. The Torah says that the chelav of a nevela and chelav of a treifa, you could do for all your malacha, meaning there is not in iser hana, it's mutar ba'ana, but you can't eat it. Now the Gemara says, v'amar mar l'may hilchasa, amar Torah, yavo iser nevela v'yachol, let me read that again. V'amar mar l'may hilchasa, amar Torah. And now why does the Torah have to do that? Meaning, the Torah already earlier, Rashi says back in the third parak of Vayikra, the Torah already told us that we're not allowed to eat chalef. Chalef is aser. And the Torah already told us as well that you can, it's only aser b'chalef, it's not aser b'anah. So you have chalef, so what do you do with the chalef? Right? And last week we got a really good picture of what the chalef is. So so what you do with it is you shech the animal, you take the chalef of the animal, and you use it for fuel. And you use it to light your lamps and your lanterns. So good. But then the Torah has to repeat itself, and the Torah says, and you know what? The chelav of nevela and the chelav of trefa, yaseh l'chom l'acha, but don't eat it. Like, that's repetitive. And to which the Gemara's answer is, so, yavo iser nevela, v'yachol al iser chelav. Yavo iser trefa, v'yachol al iser chelav. And so what the Torah is telling us is that superimposed on the chelav, which is already prohibited, so the Isser of Nevela is going to superimpose on top of that. The Isser of Trefa, if it's a Trefa, is going to superimpose on top of the Chalev. The general rule throughout the Torah is, Ein Isser Chal al Isser. That one Isser does not superimpose on top of another Isser. Now there are rule breakers, there are exceptions to the rule. There is Isser Mosif, and there's Isser Kolel, and okay. But the rule, the starting point is, Ein Isser Chal al Isser. And so for that, the Torah says that it's right, but here's an exception to the rule. In other words, when I have a trefer or nevela, the chelev also is going to, in addition to being an isser of chelev, is also going to be an isser of trefa and is also going to be an isser of nevela. Good. Now, where does all that take us to? The next top of the next amud. The isakadatcha, trefa hainu misukenes. So now, if we can just imagine that trefa and misukenes are one and the same, because that's what we wanted to argue. That categorically, it's all the same thing. So if we're saying that it's all the same, lichsav rechmana, chelev nevela, yaseh l'chom malacha, v'chelev trefa lo so chelu. So the Torah could have just got away by saying that the chelev nevela, you could do whatever you want, and the chelev trefa lo so chlu. And the Torah, which wants to be as sparing as possible, that's all the Torah needed to say if it's categorically all one and the same thing. The anamina, and then we could have just simply finished the sentence. Uma mechayim is asi iser trefa chayil al iser chelev la'achar misa mibaye. If while the animal is alive, meaning during its trefa stage, its trefa phase, if the iser trefa is going to superimpose itself on the iser of chelev, and that's while the animal's alive, then surely post mortem, after the animal's dead, so then the Isser of Nevela is going to superimpose on the Isser of Chelev as well. If they were all the same category, it therefore must be that it's not all the same category. Elami dekazav rechman and Nevela mechlal detrefal av hainu misukenis. So it therefore must be that the Torah, since it gives us an extra pasuk, extra words, what seemingly is a redundancy, it's not a redundancy. It's because that trefa and misukenes are not one and the same. They are categorically different. And that is the proof that misukenes and trefa are two different categories, treifa being usser and misakenis being mutter. To which the Gemara says, Maskev lamabar ravashi v'dom alolam emelecha hainu treifa hainu misukenis. So the Gemara says, no, we don't have to conclude that way. We can argue that treifa and misukenis are really one and the same. Udikamart nevela dekasur v'chaman olamali. And what bothered you? The redundancy in the pasuk doesn't bother me. So lahach nevela delo asya mikoch misukenis. So the Gemara says, because I can make the argument of, you know, we can have a nevela where it wasn't prior to that point of misukenis. Consider, as the Gemara is about to do. When we say that a misukenis and nevela are, when we're trying to argue that misukenis and nevela are one and the same category. Why? Because really, it's a natural sequence. The natural sequence is that the animal's holech lamus, and then death. But the Gemara now wants to argue, but it doesn't have to be that way, right? Meaning, can't it be that we can arrive at nevela without ever hitting the point of misukenis? For example, hechidah mishasa gistera. So the Gemara says, let's say you take the knife and you just lop the animal right into two pieces, right? Crosswise, l'rachva says Rashi, you just simply divide the animal in half. The animal now is rendered a nevela immediately, without a misukenit stage. At least that's what the Gemara is trying to argue. The Gemara says, I don't buy the argument. E efshar de lohavi misukenis porta mikame de lifsok laruba. So the Gemara says, I simply do not buy it. Every animal that's a nevela, even if it's just for a moment, goes through a misukenis stage. Even as we're cutting the animal into two, and even though we are rendering the animal quote-unquote instant nevela, no, it's not instant nevela. It's a moment of misukenis followed then by nevela. Okay. So what the Gemara now is arguing is that there's no such thing as nevela without misukenis. Every nevela has misukenis, and now that every nevela has misukenis, so then the previous argument of the Gemara does in fact work. So we have at least right now one basis, one argument to argue that a misukenis and a treifa are not one and the same thing. So the Gemara says, or we can make another argument using the very same pasuk. Meaning, if the whole idea of the Torah is that the Torah says that the chelav of nevela and the chelav of treifa are also, and the question was, but we knew that already, and the answer is to superimpose the iser of treifa and nevela on the already existing iser of chelev, the Gemara says, okay, I give you that, but why does the Torah have to repeat the word chelev? The Torah could have just simply said, chelev nevelu treifa. Why does the Torah have to repeat the word chelev twice? Zuhi she'in chelba chaluk mi besara, v'yesh lecha acher she'chelba chaluk mi besara, v'ezuzuzu misukenis. Ah, sometimes the chelev and the basar are one and the same. Meaning, what does that mean, one and the same? They're not the same, meaning that they're both aser. When would that be? When the animal died without a shechita. But if the animal died with a shechita, even if the animal is a misukenis, the chelev and the basar are not one in the same. Meaning the chelev is aser, and the meat would be mutter. So that would be another proof in the Torah, let's call it a drasha, in the Torah, that misukenis is in fact mutter. Okay, so
a second, millisecond before death, she's on the succubus, and we still eat it.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. Gemara doesn't say that, but that's certainly interesting. Okay, if I were to ask you, this is going to be a really hard exercise. If I would ask you, okay, so please summarize to me why it is that a misukenis is in fact mutter, meaning we know that's a conclusion. We know it's so. The Mishnah taught us it's so. But what's the source in the Torah? And I say, okay, up until now, today's daf, please summarize. How do we know misukenis is usser? It's really difficult. Meaning, so what it comes out now from in the Gemara is, as much as the Gemara tried to attempt, well, we have the category of nevela, that means the misukenis must be okay. The Gemara says, not necessarily. Misukenis and nevela may be one in the same category. But we have treifa, so that must mean that misukenis is fundamentally different because treifa is symptomatic, misukenis is asymptomatic. The Gemara says, that's also not true. Because treifa and misukenis also may categorically be the same. So if up until this point in the Gemara I say to you, what is the source in the Torah that tells us that misukenis is mutter? Muteris, if I want to be grammatically good. So the answer is, it's really hard. Meaning it comes from a pasuk Right now, at this stage of the Gemara, it comes from a pasuk from the seventh parak of Vayikra, Chelav Nevela Chelav Trefa Yeselachom Malacha VaCholosachlu, and it comes from either the fact that the Torah has to give us redundancy of categories, Nevela and Trefa. Why do I need both? Maybe it comes from the extra language of Chelav, the fact that the Torah used the word Chelav twice. Sometimes Chelav is like the animal, they're both Aser. Sometimes the Chelav is not like the animal, the Chelav is Aser, but the animal's Mutter. Okay. Meaning, admittedly, not super straightforward. Well, we'll start with tomorrow, the Ibai Sema, where we're going to start tomorrow. The Gemara is going to give us a somewhat more straightforward source in the Torah than Mr. Kenneth's Mutter, albeit it comes from a Pasuk in Yecheskel, which is, you know, that's Navi already. So, but generally speaking, when you have Navi, the Gemaras want to say that the Navi is just clarifying the Din Da'araisa, meaning obviously it's part and parcel of Halacha Moshe Sinai, and the Navi is just a Gilui Milsa, if you will. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up.